Hello and welcome to Athletic Therapy Now, a podcast for athletic therapists by an athletic therapist. My name is Ashley Burr and I will be your host. Thank you for joining us today.
Welcome to today's podcast episode on Athletic Therapy Now, what to look for in a continuing education course. Today is episode 4, and we have Nikki Smith with us today. Nikki is a certified athletic therapist, owner and founder of Revolution Rehab, Inc., a mixed therapy physical rehab clinic in Winnipeg. Nikki has been practicing athletic therapy since 2014, and created Revolution in late 2016 to support other rehab professionals. She frequently mentors student therapists on athletic therapy and the business side of the industry. Nikki and I, we went to university together and we studied for our certification exams together. And since then, we've worked on some different collaborative opportunities, mostly focusing around women's health. So, hi, Nikki. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Today we're going to have a little bit of just a discussion versus a Q&A. I'm going to ask some questions that have come up from students that I've had, and then we'll both kind of share what our thoughts on, our opinions on these discussion points. So the first question I have is, what would you tell an athletic therapist if they were to ask you what your opinion is on the next continuing education course that they should take?
I think, yeah, you and I have talked about this quite a bit. I think it depends, right, on are they new, are they like brand spanking new, wet behind the ears, new therapist straight out of university, or have they been practicing for a bit and they're just looking for my opinion? So when students ask, or are you wanting certifieds? Do I want to talk certifieds first?
Give us both. Say student and then say your opinion on certified therapists.
Yeah, because it's different. So when students ask me, my answer is usually, because there really isn't a right or a wrong, right? But my answer is usually, in my opinion, try to take something that complements what you've learned in university. So something that isn't going to completely challenge your treatment paradigm. So for example, acupuncture completely challenged my treatment paradigm. So taking that out of university would have been very confusing. So something like cupping, some different extra or different massage techniques like soft tissue release, any kind of myofascial stuff, a lot of that, any exercise stuff, a lot of that kind of bolsters what you've already learned in university. So I think that doesn't, it's easier to digest that and incorporate it into your practice as a new therapist. Before I go on, what do you think about it?
I agree. I mean, something that's not going to challenge you too much, but at the same time, I guess it depends. Like, as you know, I teach a cupping course, I teach a pelvic health course. I've had new grads on both courses. The cupping course, I get a ton of students, and they love that course because it's something that they're already using with their in their clinical placements. And so it's easy for them to just pick that up because it's included in some of the stuff that they're already learning. The pelvic health course is a lot of new information. And I feel like in the first year of being certified, you're just trying to figure out how to be a certified athletic therapist. And it's such a huge learning curve at that point. So I think it depends on how ready you are for a challenge. So I agree. If you're a new grad or if you're a student, take something that you already have a little bit of an idea of or something that you can use right away that's not going to challenge you too much. At the same time, taking a course that's really going to challenge your beliefs can be easier to digest when you're a new grad versus when you're...
Yeah.
10 years into a course.
And your biases are set.
Yeah. Like the pelvic health course that Jenny Telfer-Krem and I teach it does challenge a lot of beliefs. And when we get new grads taking the course, they are a lot more accepting of some of those challenges. Whereas when their kind of feedback is like, okay, this was really good. This is a lot of information, but it's really good. And I'm so glad I took this. Whereas when it's somebody who's been in the course for 10 years, they still have great feedback, but it's more along that lines of like, my brain is exploding right now because I believed this for 10 years and you're showing me this research that's come out in the last 10 years. And now I need to digest how this fits in with my current practice. So I do think there's pros and cons to taking those types of courses. And in regards to acupuncture, what I tell students, because that's a common one people ask about, is part of me wishes that I took it when I first certified because I would have had the time to study. I had a toddler and I was getting busy in the clinic. And so in order to take it, I was taking time off of work to take the course and therefore losing money. And like I was studying and staying up late and waking up early to get through what I needed to study. But had I taken it out of university, there's no way I would have studied the way I did because I was over it. So, to finish what I'm saying on my long rant here, I would say that as a new grad, what are you prepared to study for? Do you want a course where you can just show up, learn what you can learn, and you're done? Or do you want a course where you need to take as much time in university or as you did in university to study? Because that's going to make that difference.
Yeah, and just leave the ball in their court. I think sometimes with, especially now in my practice and with all these students coming in through our clinic, they see the way I work compared to, say, one of our newer therapists. And I think, and we've gone through this too, right? Where you learn something, you're like, oh, why didn't I learn this in university? And I think when students see these different skills and the different ways of thinking and different types of treatment and assessments, they think that it's better than what they've learned in university. And that's not true. It's just different. And when students sit and really, they're really interested and they're really questioning me about courses, I will tell them that if I'm stuck, if I'm not getting results, or if I'm just, my brain is tying itself in knots during an assessment or during rehab, I always go back to basics. I will always return to what I learned in university because I think that those tools are your base and it won't let you down. Is it going to help 100%? No, but we're not going to be able to help 100% of people. Does it work on most? Yeah. Is it the most efficient? No. Is it sexy and new and interesting? No, it's not. It's your basic, right? Your basic base stuff, but that's what university is supposed to be for. So I think I find myself reminding students all the time now, because I used to be that new therapist that I was like, oh, well, we could have learned this. And why didn't we learn that? And, well, you have a whole lifetime now to learn it, but get good at your base stuff because it won't let you down. It will not forsake you. It's cumbersome, but it won't forsake you. So don't abandon your university education. Just compliment it. And I think it's good for students to learn that. And new certifieds. Yeah.
Yeah, I like university is your base of support. It's your foundation. Yeah. You need it. You need all of those things to be able to build those continuing education courses. And without that foundation and that base of support, you can't learn those little nitty gritty things. And as much as it would be nice to learn some of those things in university, what can you take out? There's nothing that you can take out of university. And I mean, I used to think that some of the courses, it was like, well, I'm never going to use this. But I don't think there's a single course in university, mandated course in university, that, related to athletic therapy and research that I don't use now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are certain things I wish they expanded on more, say, for example, the mental side of it and the psychological side of it, both for our mental and emotional well-being, and to be able to provide better support and referral for clients. But there's so much stuff out there. As soon as you, after you have your first patient cry on your table, not because of pain, but just because the information you've given them, no matter how big or small, it's the straw that broke the camel's back. Once you have that first emotional breakdown happen in your office, you start to realize how ill-equipped you are. And then you either deal with it and try to logic your way through it, or seek out additional resources and learn to have some tools.
And that's what brings me to kind of our next question of, what would you tell somebody who's already certified and has been certified as a course to take? And that's one of the things I would say, like, you find that missing puzzle in the things that you want to learn, and you find a course that will teach you those things. And so you have your first client cry on you and you don't know what to do and how to handle it, or they've told you something and you don't know how to handle it, find a course that's going to help you figure out how to handle that and how to learn from that. So before I go into that a little bit more, what would you tell somebody who's been certified for a little while, and how to choose what course to take?
I think there's a couple things to it. First, I think people think you have to pay for courses and pay for knowledge. You don't. You can look things up, you can read research, learn to be discerning. That's important. But there's all, you and I know, there's all sorts of free resources and workshops. And when you start digging into Facebook groups, there's support groups, and there's just so much out there. So I think the first thing now I've started talking about is, you don't have to pay for it to have a value. Look for what is out there. There's a lot of free, even like Rock Tape. I think it's Rock Tape. Spider Tech, I think, is another one. They offer free workshops. It's like a 1-hour online workshop and to learn how to tape. Have I done an official course on taping? No, I've just learned some basics, and then you just expand from there. So I think the first thing is, you don't have to spend money to get smarter, which I think is something we think we have to do once we've spent so much money on university. So that's the first thing. Books. Books are not that expensive, usually. Podcasts are huge, right? Then I personally have two approaches. And again, like we said, I don't think there's a right or wrong. It's just finding out what works for you. I look at it one of two ways. You either have, like you said, your gaps in knowledge. So, okay, I'm not great at shoulder injuries, rehabbing shoulder injuries or assessing shoulder injuries, as an example. So you can take a course to fill that gap in your knowledge. Or you can focus on taking courses in the stuff you're really passionate about and become, we can't say specialist, right? But become focused into that thing. Turns out I'm really passionate about working with pregnant women. How many athletic therapy courses are focused on pregnant women, right? And yet it's like 50% of my client base. So you can find your weakness, which I do think is good to work on because it'll strengthen everything else. But you can also follow your passions, and then you're going to get really, really good at those things too. You don't have to be something for everybody. It's just understanding who you want to work with. And then those people will start to follow you anyway, and other professionals will start to refer to you. Don't lose your other stuff. But yeah, I think those are my big ones. It can be free. The cost isn't necessarily a direct correlation to the value. You and I both know that with all the courses we've taken. Yeah, and then, is it a gap in your knowledge you want to fill, or is it just something that really interests you? Because if you're interested in it, you're going to get good at it because that passion is there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree. And I think it was pretty early on in my career, I was looking at some courses, and somebody was coming into Winnipeg, and I was like, oh, I really want to take this course, but I don't really have the funds for it. And I was talking with Robin Edge about it, and she kind of goes, well, do you feel like you need to learn more on that topic? Because at the time, and I mean, even now, we don't get a lot of courses in Winnipeg. They don't they're far and few between. And I kind of said, well, no, I don't really get clients like this, but it's a course in Winnipeg and I want to take it. And she kind of said, like, well, think about when you're choosing a course, what is your gap in your knowledge? What's an injury or a client or a concern that's come into your clinic that you haven't been able to give the answers to? And then go out and find that course. Instead of just taking every course that comes to Winnipeg, go out and find the courses that are going to add value to you as a person and to your clinic. So that was really great advice. I'm paraphrasing, and I've probably adjusted the way that she said it in my brain because it was a while ago. But yeah, that's my that's what I continue to recommend to students and new therapists that ask me. And I totally agree, Nikki, like, we don't need to pay in order to learn. We can read research. We should be reading research. We can take podcasts. We can take webinars. We can, I said take podcasts, listen to podcasts. But at the same time, you know, being critical in the way that we're thinking when we're learning, not everything that comes out is necessarily true or accurate. And so using our critical thinking skills to determine whether or not, okay, this is going to work for us, or yes, I believe this person is correct because they are very knowledgeable in this information, or their references are updated. And that's, we're going to get into that on the next question. But I think the other really cool thing that has come up since COVID is that everything's online now. We can now take courses across the world because everything has the ability to be online. And so we no longer have to wait for people to come to Winnipeg.
Thank God.
Yeah, right.
Who wants to come to Winnipeg?
Yeah. So I'm going to take that on to our next question. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what are the key things to look for in a continuing education course? So let's say I want to take a course on the shoulder. How do I know if I'm taking a course on the shoulder that's a helpful course that I'm going to gain something from? Like, what do I look for in these courses?
I, in all honesty, personally, think that there's a little bit of Russian roulette to it, because qualifications, education, that's why every therapist is different, right? Every instructor is going to be different. That's why everybody's different. Every human is different. And I think even at the university level, right, people who teach university courses might be really smart in a topic, but that does not necessarily make them great instructors. So if you're not, the information might be locked in there and you can't get it out. So to base it on something like qualifications alone, or papers written, research done, number of courses taught, you would think the more somebody teaches, the better they're going to be at it. Not necessarily. They might just be repeating the same thing over and over and over again. So really, they've taught one thing that they're repeating, or are they continuing to grow? Like, I know you do, and you're constantly changing how you do stuff, which is so cool and exhausting sounding. For me, something that I actually look for is, are they still a practicing therapist? So for me, that's actually really, really important. So I usually look at, okay, this person offering this course, are they still in their own practice? They're most likely, they're going to be part-time because they're offering courses, because that's, you know, you're doing it. It's a lot. But it's really important for me on a personal level as a professional to make sure that if I'm going to be spending time listening to somebody, I want to know that what they're teaching me is something that they've actually been practicing on their own, and that they have personal experience with it in the clinic, working with different types of people, different bodies, and different scenarios. So that is actually more important to me than other things, because for me, that's a tried, tested, and true. Because you and I know that research changes constantly, and just because we learn something doesn't make it correct. It doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't make it factual. We're taught that things happen a certain way, and we're taught very black and white, and we know that the human body really isn't like that. Let's face it, we're just not smart enough yet to really understand. So it's more, to me, it's more of the proof is in the pudding. Yeah. I don't know if you were expecting that answer.
No, yeah, I totally agree. I think that some of the things to look for in a course is, number one, does it cover what you want to learn? So looking at, if you're going to take a course and you want to know, like a cupping course, if you're going to take a cupping course and you want to know is there going to be research-based information, check and see if the instructor is offering research-based information. You can ask them for the reference list before you even take a course or pay for a course. Most of the time they're going to send it. I know why I would. I've never had anybody ask for a reference list. But
and is it within the last 10 years?
Yes. Oh my goodness. I have taken courses where there is no, I shouldn't say no, less than 5% of the research is within the last 10 years. And it drives me up a wall that courses are like that. They're not updated. And so that's one of the other, that was my next point, is are the references up to date? Because things change so frequently. I know with my courses, shameless plug, I'm after every course, I'm updating the research, as long as the courses aren't too close together. But I'm always reading research. I actually get emails sent to me on a weekly basis from PubMed on certain topics. So like cupping, diastasis, POP, and UI, incontinence and prolapse. And so I'll try to go through it every week and see if there's any new research that's come out that would pertain to the courses. And then I read it if it's come out, if I can get access to it. And then if it pertains to it, I add it to the course. If it doesn't, then I don't. But making sure that the references are up to date. And then, will this course help you reach your goals as a practitioner or as a person? Because if you don't want to, let's think of a course, acupuncture. If you don't want to use acupuncture in your practice, don't take an acupuncture course.
If you're terrified of needles, don't take acupuncture.
Yeah. And I'm terrified of needles and I still took an acupuncture course. So I'm terrified of having people stick needles in me. I have trust issues. But I'm not terrified of putting needles in other people.
Yeah.
I think just, you can even take courses as, I've had people take the pelvic health course just because they don't work with pregnancy, postnatal, but they want to learn more for themselves and for their bodies. And, spending $600 on a course is cheaper than going to therapy for 6 months or 3 months or whatever timeline it might be. And you might get more out of it if that's what your goal is. So what are your goals of taking the course and is it going to help you reach those goals? So those are the things that I kind of look for in a continuing education course. And of course, the instructor, is it an instructor that I think I might jive with or like? And so listening to different podcasts that they've done, or if they've done blogs, or if they've done webinars, or maybe I can, book a call with them and get to know them a little bit better, especially if it's a bit of a longer or more expensive course. You want to know that you're not just,
You need to vet your instructor.
Yeah.
I think you trying to figure out, sorry for interrupting, if that person's treatment philosophy fits in with your own. So because we're on acupuncture, I'll use acupuncture, or that treatment style fits in with your own. So if somebody wants to be like, acupuncture is going to be very systemic. So if that's important to you and you want to learn about homeostasis and balance and yin and yang, parasympathetic, sympathetic, stuff like that, I think something like acupuncture is great. If you are a therapist that wants to be very point specific, no pun intended, acupuncture might be the kind of course for you, especially if you want to take, say, dry needling. But acupuncture is more of a global experience. Or if you want to be if you are a very hands-on therapist and that's something you're very passionate about, and you're not as interested in exercise prescription, maybe taking a course on exercise, maybe it's good because it's going to challenge your treatment paradigm, but maybe you're not passionate about that. So maybe take something that's more manual based. If you don't believe in energy work, maybe don't take Reiki or craniosacral therapy or something like that, right? So I think too, taking things that complement your personal treatment approach is very important, because then also you're going to enjoy it, which means you'll be better at it, theoretically. Yeah, if you're passionate, you'll be good at it.
Yeah, and you'll enjoy it, and you'll want to learn more about it and take the time to learn more about it, even when you're done the course. And I think that kind of ties into our last question of, do you think the instructor of a course matters? So there's so many different courses out there that, you know, the instructor might be different, depending on who it is that weekend or where you're taking the course. Like, there's multiple of every course. You can find 10 courses on the shoulder, and you can find, 10 courses on pregnancy and cupping and all of the different things out there. So, do you think the instructor of a course matters? And you kind of already said that. You said, you want to make sure they jive and that you follow the same treatment principles. So what else would you say in answer to that?
I think depending on the type of population as well that instructor regularly works with, if they're practicing, is going to influence how they teach, right? Because bless Ben and his stories. What helps you remember things, right? I find it's those personal stories that instructors get into, whether it's university, continuing education, whatever. It's those stories about what's happening in clinic and on the field, if you will, and those personal experiences that I think really shapes that learning experience and the approach the instructor is going to take. So, but that's also why sometimes I think it is a little bit of Russian roulette, because sometimes it's hard to figure out things and learn things about your instructor. I'm going through craniosacral therapy right now. Unfortunately, I have to reschedule course 2 because I was quite sick. But the first instructor was fantastic, and after that time, I got to know him and his passions, and having somebody who is living and breathing that coursework, like you and what you do, right? Reading information every week, right? It's good. You want instructors that are excited to nerd out on the information that they're presenting. I think that that's really important, and that brings a level, like it's a whole other level. That's why, to side note, kinesiology courses at the university are so fun, because the instructors are so passionate about it. And then you take a course in another department, you're like, I don't understand what's happening. Where's all the life? Where's the energy? You can have instructors that are passionate about other things, but kin instructors are especially passionate about what they teach. So that passion is important. But to digress, or I digress, the craniosacral level 2 had a different instructor. And I was very concerned about how is this instructor going to present things, because there's a very human component to that type of information, and there's an energy component. And unfortunately, I didn't get to take that course, but hearing from participants, they were like, it's fantastic. This instructor was just as passionate about it as the first instructor. Different experiences. Maybe they work with more of a peds population. But for me, that passion in your instructor is really important versus somebody who's just going through the motions because they need to make money. We all need to make money, but it's way more interesting to take a course from somebody who has bought into what they're doing, hook, line, and sinker, and wants to take you along for the ride, because there's it's hard to put a price on experience like that, a learning experience like that, because it's fantastic. And you don't necessarily have to pay for an experience like that, because those people often talk about it for free. Anthony Lowe. you can find those people. So yeah, passion's important.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that. Like, I'm the type of person, when I find a good book and I read it and I love it, I will find every book that that author has, and I will read every single one of them, because I like the writing style, and I get so into it. And I'm kind of the same with courses. If I have found an instructor that I like their style, I like their personality, I know what they're going to teach, I will take all of their courses. And I mean, you dropped Anthony's name. Like, I have taken almost every single one of his courses that he offers, because I just had such a good experience on, actually my first course was with him, live course, was the masterclass. And that was a 3-month long course. So I had taken some webinars and some recorded courses that he did, and then hopped onto this 3-month, super intense course. And since then, I've taken all of his smaller courses for the most part. And it's just, I just continue to have those same positive experiences because I know what I'm getting myself into. But yeah, I definitely think that the instructor of a course matters. And I think that you have to, like you said, you have to kind of jive with what that instructor, you have to jive with the instructor, and you have to like the way that they teach. Because if you don't like the way an instructor teaches, and if you don't like their personality, you're still going to learn. You will still learn a lot. You just won't have as great of an experience. And you might not be able to have all those takeaways. You mentioned stories. I still, it's been, 13 years since I've taken Prevention and Care with Ben. And I still remember, I don't know why I remember this story, but he told this story about how when he was in elementary school, he was playing soccer. It was middle of winter. He sprained his ankle. He had a Christmas concert that night. And he never took his winter boot off. And he was fine all day. He didn't have any problems. But as soon as he took his boot off, his ankle just swelled up. And why do I remember the story? I have no idea. But I remember it. And it reminds me that compression is a huge component and an important component in that early stage, in that acute stage of injuries, in helping to decrease swelling. So just such a silly story. But something that has stuck with me for almost 15 years.
I honestly thought you were going to tell the story about him in, I think it was PNC, jumping up. I remember him jumping up on a desk. Maybe it was PNC. I don't know. Ben jumped up on a desk and started contracting his hamstrings to show us
PCL.
How his PCL is completely torn. So his tibia is just, and as students, right, you're just oh, that's so cool and disgusting at the same time. I'll never forget it. What instructor or professor suddenly jumps up onto a desk and lifts their pant leg up right to their thigh to show you their knee, and they're like, look at this freaky thing that happened to me. That's awesome. That's passion. Find instructors that are like that.
Yes.
Because you'll follow them forever.
Yeah. That's great. I do remember that one too. I just, the boot was one that just, Yeah, and then it's, so for those of you listening, Nikki and I recently took a first aid course together. And I mean, first aid is first aid. You'd think that it would be the same thing across the board. And we both just, our schedules didn't align with what was being run by Ben, who is who we normally take our first aid course with. And so we took it at a different location. Won't say where, but a different location. And Nikki and I just, we did not enjoy the recertification course. The way that it was run was not what we were expecting. It's not what we liked. We didn't like the instructors. We didn't feel that they were at the same, I mean, they weren't at the same level as what we're used to.
They weren't at the same.
And it was Yeah. For Nikki and I, we've taken, I don't know, 10 recerts on it. And so we know our stuff, but we just, it was not a good experience.
It was sad. It was concerning and it was sad.
Yeah. And so
at least we did it together.
Yeah. And that tells me that, yes, it is important. It's the exact same information as every other first aid course out there. But because of the instructor, we had a really crappy experience. And so, you know, we want our instructors for courses to enjoy what they're teaching. We want them to, what did you say, live, love, and learn, and continue to live, love, and learn what they're teaching. And they themselves, I think it's important for instructors to continue to keep an open mind, because research changes, information changes. And if you have an instructor that is so set in their ways and refuses to keep an open mind with other people's opinions, then if things change, they will not change their course content. They're too, I'm going to use the word stubborn, to accept that the information they used to teach is no longer accurate and true. And so that makes it that the course is going to become obsolete, because the information will no longer be true if they are too set in their ways. And then if you're the type of person that really likes to ask questions and have a discussion, then you want to try and find a course that allows for that. And some courses just don't, right? Like some courses, they're so dense and they don't have the time to have a full-on discussion. But if you can, you want to try and find an instructor that's accepting of your question, accepting of discussion points, accepting of you challenging them, and taking that time to, I don't know, what am I looking for here, Nikki? Taking that time to...
To critically think through the question with you, because we know in therapy land, it, again, like I said, it's not black and white. So I think sometimes when you ask it, and you're not, challenge might be a strong word. Hey, you might be challenging them, or they may find it challenging. But really, I think the goal when you're asking a question is you're trying to get clarity, because maybe you learned something different, or it's, I think finding an instructor who's willing to critically think through your inquiries is important, because both of you at the end of that conversation learn, and so does the rest of the class if you're able to do that in front of the class. And that you won't forget the information that you've learned when you are able to have that open dialogue with an instructor, especially when other people get involved too. That can be a very, very cool experience, especially if you're working with therapists who've been practicing for longer, and then you have all of this experience coming into this melting pot of knowledge, and then we all just leave as better professionals, the instructor included. Yeah, instructors who are also students.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And it's, you know, I used to be this person who I would go to a course and I would sit in the back corner and I wouldn't talk, because I was too nervous to be called out in such a negative way. And I mean, it was actually Anthony, his masterclass, working with him and all of his TAs and the other people that were on the course just helped me to build that confidence and learn that it's okay to ask questions, and it's okay to ask questions that might be against what's being taught. And It's not wrong to ask these questions. And I mean, you know, we've all heard that thing, like, there's no stupid questions, but there are. If you're not paying attention to the material and you're asking a question, like, you're sitting there listening and you're like, okay, where did you say the bathroom was? Okay. We just said that, right? Like, and so, yeah, having that ability to have that dialogue, that open dialogue, I like that word that you use there, can be really important. But if you're the practitioner that does still want to sit in the back and back corner and not ask questions, that's okay too. You don't have to participate in these open dialogues. You can absorb the information, or maybe you're okay with taking a recorded course because that's how you learn best. Find the courses that you learn or the way you learn best and take those courses. Yeah, there was something else I was going to add on to that, and I can't remember what it was.
I think just to add, and this is kind of just on an adjacent or maybe a tangent, one thing I learned about myself, and I think that when you said, oh, a course is coming to Winnipeg, I'm going to take it. And then Robin Edge was talking to you about, you know, why are you taking it? I was the same person that I felt like I just needed to take more and more and more courses. And it was because I think it's something we all, I'm going to say, suffer from at a university, is that imposter syndrome. And you feel like what you learned at university, you're like, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have somebody to tell me I'm doing it right. I don't feel like you have imposter syndrome. So I was trying to take courses, I think initially, because I had such a massive fear of failure. And I was trying to fill my gaps, what I thought were my gaps in knowledge. And then you realize if you critically think, you can pretty much think through anything. And if you can't solve it, refer on. Don't take the money from somebody if you're not helping them. Refer on, which is fine. That's fine too. You're still being the professional. You're still taking care of them in a different way. But to back up, actually, I lost my train of thought.
Imposter syndrome.
Thank you, imposter syndrome. So I actually personally went back because I kept checking, am I an effective therapist? Because I don't feel like I'm an effective therapist. And for years, I felt like that. I had stress and anxiety over every assessment. You know, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm not a good therapist. I was a struggling B student in university. Like, I studied my little butt off and I barely got through. And I actually had to take a look, and instead of asking the question, am I an effective therapist? I realized after years that the question is flawed, not me. In general or on average, am I helping people? Am I an effective therapist? Am I actually getting results for people? And instead of guessing, I actually looked back through an entire year of charts. It turns out, yeah, the results are in. The data says yes. Way more often than not, I am helping people. And that changed my perspective on continuing education, because then I started taking courses based on my passions and my desires, not fear of failure. Fear of failure is a very good motivator. I tell students that all the time, but at one point, I think it's healthy to let that go and then grow because you want to, not because you're afraid. So I think that for me was a really big distinction, but it took me many years to be an adult and grow into that.
That right there. That was great. I fully, fully agree. And I've done the same thing. And I mean, you, for those of you listening, I mean, Nikki and I talk a couple times a week, most weeks, about, yep, like, it's okay, what's come up and what are our questions and what are our concerns and what are our, you know, the things that have come up in clinic or in practice or in courses or all of these. Nikki's my athletic therapist discussion buddy. And sometimes it's just, okay, Nikki, I need to go through this case with you. And I just use her as a board, and I finish up, and then she goes, yeah, you just answered your own question, which, you know,
more often than not too, right?
Yeah. Find that person. And it, like, it's the same way with Nikki, where it's like, okay, well, I think you just got your question there.
Yeah.
So, and we are coming up to 40 minutes or just past 40 minutes. So, I love everything that you have said, Nikki. I feel like this has gone by really quick, but we should, wrap it up, and, maybe we'll have to do a second podcast on this one. So,
sounds good.
Just to recap this, the first question, which was, what would you tell an athletic therapist if they ask your opinion of what their next continuing education course should be? We talked about, you know, if you're a new grad or your student take something that's going to complement what you're learning or what you learned in university, not something that's going to significantly challenge things, unless you feel like you're ready for that. Because sometimes right out of university, you might just need some time before you get into something that's really just going to break your brain or that you have to spend a lot of time studying. So consider how much time you want to put into a course, and how much you want to learn and where you are in that. But also finding the gaps in your knowledge. And this is for new grads and people who have been certified for a while. If you're looking for a course to take, don't necessarily think about, and we haven't even touched this subject, but like, don't necessarily think about the CEU components of it. There's so many free things out there that you can take, and the cost of the course, whether or not you have to spend money or not, should not be part of, I mean, obviously the spending of money is going to always be part of considerations, but find the gap in your knowledge. What is it that you feel like you need to learn more about in order to feel confident, and take that course, read that research, find that information. And, you know, there's lots of options. So we don't have to wait anymore for courses to come to where you are. You can find those courses online. And then when we're thinking about key things to look for in a continuing education course, we want to know if that course, I mean, one, help you reach your goals? Is it going to teach you the things that you want to learn? Are the references up to date? And does the treatment style fit with your own treatment style? So if you're not interested in something like Reiki, don't take a Reiki course. If you are interested, then take it. And then, you know, does the instructor matter? Well, Nikki's term is kind of like Russian roulette, which is totally true. But if you do find a course where you jive with that instructor, or you've taken a webinar, or you've heard really great things about them, then you take that course and you find that it works for you. Continue to take courses with that person if you want to. And, you know, maybe finding a instructor that's passionate in what they do, that continues to live, love, and learn that information that they're sharing with you. And somebody who wants to work through those questions with you and has an open mind and is willing to do an open dialogue with you if you have those questions can be really important. So I think I summed that up. Is there anything you wanted to add to that summary, Nikki?
There's no right or wrong. That's it. There's no right or wrong. Just keep learning. You don't have to pay for it. You can. You don't have to. Just keep learning.
Yeah, exactly. So
speaking of learning, yes. I have a course coming up. I'm going to selflessly plug my the business side of athletic therapy. So a couple times a year, I teach this course. It's just a 2.5-hour workshop. It's about like employees versus contractors, types of work agreements. Is there an ideal percentage split? We have a conversation on that. What to look for in a contract? What is GST? Ways to negotiate when you're applying, resumes, cover letters, that kind of thing. We do talk briefly about continuing education. Basically, I like to tell people basically you're holding a degree in your hand. Now, how do you go from holding a degree to getting a paycheck? And it kind of bridges that gap for you. We have two courses coming up. One is Thursday, May 9th from 5 p.m. till 7:30, and the other is Saturday, May 18th from 9:30 till 12:30. The link, Ashley, I think you have posted it. It is also on the Revolution website, revolutionrehab.ca, under careers. So revolutionrehab.ca, click on careers, and then there's a link to register there.
Yeah, that will all be in the show notes. The links to Nikki's website and the course information. And if you want to learn a little bit more about it, episode 2 of this podcast was with Nikki talking about kind of the business side of athletic therapy. And that'll give you a little bit of an introduction on what her course has to offer.
Mm-hmm. It is in person, because we do actually hand out the Revolution contract, and that's a legal document. So we do it in person so that we can literally control the distribution of that document, but it gives therapists a really good idea of what to look for and to understand the basics of those agreements, because legal jargon is hard to navigate, and I'm still learning after years and years and years. So I think what I'm trying to do is, after years of trying to hire therapists and realizing they didn't even know if they needed or wanted an employee or contractor agreement, I started realizing there was a bit of gap in knowledge there. So what I'm offering, I never believe is the be all end all, because I don't think any of us has the be all end all, but it is my experience and what I've learned as a business owner since 2014.
Thank you for that, Nikki.
That is all.
You so much. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today, Nikki. And if anybody has any questions, there will be a link on my website that you can just pop those questions in there. And if there's some questions, we might have Nikki back for a second round for this episode. I feel like everyone's going to hear a lot from you, Nikki, and in a positive way. And have a great day, everyone.
Take care. Thanks, Ashley.